Last week we began talking about kashering, the methods of kashering utensils. We talked a little bit about libun last week. There's libun chamor and libun kal. Libun chamor is generally required when something really requires libun. So let's say something is, used by fire, used in an oven. So that will generally require libun chamor. But there are situations where one might want to be a little stricter than just boiling something in water, in which case libun kal would definitely suffice for that. So that's kind of the direction that we started going. And one thing, and I was just reminding myself as I was going over the Makoros, and something that's worth pointing out is that even though we're kind of in the Pesach mode, and part of the reason why I skipped to the section this volume was because of Pesach. But with that said, some of this is talking about year round. So we have to pay attention to whether it's Yoredeya, which case it's talking about year round, or whether it's, if it's a Shulchan Aruch and Or Chaim, then that's specifically for Pesach. So we'll have to keep these things in mind, because in some cases there are some differences. So we're continuing with the frying pans. So how do we kasher frying pans? It's on page 223, source 20. So 225. I forgot about that. This is really inconvenient. 225. So when you fry things, so you're using a little bit of oil. So is that really considered to be like cooking, or is that oil so limited that it's really considered to be on the fire, in which case you would require libun? So the Torah writes, Machvas shemitagnin bo. If you have a pan that you fry in, it also comes up in this week's parsha because there's different ways of making a korban mincha. There's a machvas is one of them that's mentioned directly in the Torah, but there's the deeper pans and the more shallow pans. The Torah says it's something totally different, right. But I'm saying the korban mincha, it's there's different ways of frying it. Or cooking it, whatever however you want to call it. So you have a pan that one fries in it. So Kasav Avi HaEzri, the Avi Ezri, the Raviyah, who's one of the, I believe he's a German Baal Tosfos, and he writes the name of his father of Yoel. I mean, Yoel Shetzricha Libun. So a frying pan requires Libun, presumably because it's on the fire and the oil is not really sufficient to allow it to just be to be Hagala. But Hukasav should.
Why? Because it don't need oil, because it has that surface, nonstick surface.
Okay, so I'll address that in a little bit. Let's just lay out the issues, and then we can come to the practical applications. Rabbeinu Yoel says that you need a libun. Hukasav should die by Hagala, but the Raviyah disagrees with his father. It says that it's enough to do Hagala to put the frying pan in boiling water. And the Torah says that his father, Rabbeinu Asher, the Rush, agrees that Hagala is sufficient. So, with that said, in source 21, the Rush actually explains both sides of the argument. So he says, "Machvash kasav Avi Ezri hugadli Abba Mari achar p'tiraso libun." So he says that frying pan is like an oven. That needs libun and needs to be put in fire. But I didn't discuss it with him. So the Rosh says that Hagala, that boiling water should be enough, and this is the practice. So one it comes to challah, so cooking and frying have the same status, so that should be here as well. That whether you're frying something, whether you're frying something with oil or cooking with water, so that should so both of these should suffice with Hagala. And it goes on to say that Chazal didn't distinguish between different types of pans. So we're gonna say frying pan is like a little bit more shallow, so that's one thing, and other pots. So where's the line there? He goes on to say, Beach Omrim Dufa Amim should be Tagnin Bav Nis Yam Besh Hashemin, Venefa Masha Psocha below Shemin. There are times where you fry things without oil, or the oil dries up very quickly. So it's being cooked without oil. In that case, it's like you're making it in the oven, in which case it seems like even the Rush would agree that if that were the situation, that would require libun. So except for example, spits and grills require libun. So fundamentally, the Rush holds if you're frying your latkes in the oil and the oil's there, then that's then if you want to kasher that pan, so you can do it with hagala. If you're
can
going
I? I'm sorry.
Yeah, but if there's no oil in it whatsoever, so Herb was saying that you have these nonstick pans and you don't need to put oil in it. In that case, you'd probably need to do libun on that pan in order to kasher it. At the moment, so Shulchan Aruch says that for Pesach we hold like the Rush that you can do hagala on a frying pan, but for other prohibitions you would need libun. But with that said, the Shach says that it's not all other prohibitions per se, but the distinction is between whether it's a terabala or whether it's isurabala. Terabala means that that the pan absorbed permitted substance. Isurabala would mean that the pan absorbed forbidden substance. So when it comes to, when it comes to chametz, so the chametz, at the time that the pan was used, it was permitted substance. So it becomes usur for a particular time, but in that case, doing hagala is sufficient, as would be the case if you have a dairy frying pan and you accidentally put meat in it, and it's been more than 24 hours. So in that case, it's also technically, we would consider that it's a terabala. But if you put chazer in it, so that's a different story. So Shach says in source 23 that the reason why for chametz it's different is because kevan de terabala, and that's what it sounds like from the Beis Yosef. So when it comes to milk versus meat, so it should be, if it's been more than 24 hours, so you should also be able to do hagala. But there's a tshuva of Menachem Azaria, the Rama Mipano, who says that there's a different reason for the distinction between Pesach and other things. So when it comes to frying pans, so non-Jews use them without water, whereas with chametz, apparently they're used with water. So so that's why with Pesach you're allowed to do a hagala. So the practical difference would be that, as it says on the bottom here, that where the frying pan was used without a significant amount of liquid and thus absorbed the flavor of dairy or meat directly. So according to the Beis Yosef and the Levush, Hagala would be valid because permitted flavor was absorbed. But according to the Rama Mipanos, Libun would be required since absorption occurred directly without a medium. The Rav Avadia Yosef seems to accept this distinction according to the first approach, that fundamentally, when it comes to a frying pan that was used with chametz, so it's a terabala, it absorbs a substance. So therefore you can do hagala with it. And then he argues on this this Ramami Pano about whether or not there's liquid in it. So he says specifically with chametz, he had to explain that the reason why you're allowed to do hagala is because you use it with water, because otherwise there's a possibility that maybe chametz is considered isur bala because on Pesach itself it's forbidden substance. So there's a question about whether we define chametz as permitted or forbidden substance depending on whether you look at, if you're looking at the chametz from the perspective of before Pesach or during Pesach. That's the distinction that Rav Avadia Yosef is making. I guess there was a cultural understanding here. Okay, fine, but that's what the Shach wrote a few hundred years ago. So Shulchan Aruch again. So to get practical, Shulchan Aruch says that Machvesh been talking about this is he's talking here about on Pesach. This is Shulchan Aruch Or HaChaim. So he says Machvesh been talking about Muteres Bagala. So for Pesach, you're allowed to do Hagala on a frying pan. So the Ramah adds, if you go to the next page, I think it's for you, that's 228. The Ramah says, V'yish machmirin l'la ben hamachvas ach b'libun kol dehu. There's some people who do libun kal, right, it's sufficient if straw is burnt on the outside. And we call that libun kal. So some say that with a frying pan, you should do libun kal. V'no'agin l'la ben l'chadchila. The custom is to perform libun, but if there are no holes in the frying pan, then hagala after the fact would be sufficient. So the Be'er Halacha understands from this. Be'er Halacha is part of the Mishnah Brura. The Be'er Halacha understands from this that you're allowed to do Libun Kal when you're just being more machmir than doing Hagala. So if something fundamentally requires Libun, then it has to be Libun Chama. But in this case, since there's a question and we're being a little bit machmir, so Libun Kal is sufficient. The way you do this, you hold the frying pan in fire on all sides for the amount of time needed to get hot, for it to get hot to the point that if straw or thread or flax touches the utensil on the other side, it will be burnt. So you'd have to, I guess, you know, put up to fire. Well, so people use bow torches for this purpose, or I guess you could again, you do have to be careful. Or you'd have to, I guess, if you put the stove on, that could probably work also. Okay, let's keep going. So Hagala is immersing something in boiling water, and that works for anything that's cooked. For anything that would be cooked through boiling water, so that would be sufficient, and that's something that we can use for a lot of different items. So we go through the process here of how to do Hagala. So number one, you have to clean the utensils. So the Rush says that you have to clean it, you have to rub it well, because otherwise the flavor won't be expelled. And the Rush talks about removing rust, that you have to remove the rust. So in the Shulchan Aruch on page 29, again, talks about, so if let's say you're kashering a knife with Hagala, so you have to rub it well with the knife sharpener, to remove all the rust. And one has to also be concerned. One has to be concerned that there are no holes in this item. So that's something that comes up sometimes when you're kashering items. If there are like holes or crevices or whatnot, so that can potentially be problematic because then the Hagala might not be entirely effective, in which case you would have to do Libun around those holes. So as far as the rust goes, the Mishnah Brura says that we're only concerned about the rust if there's potential for there to be like food substance on the utensils. But if it's just like the color, if it's just like that like red color, or there's like a little bit of blackness, but there's no it's clear that there's no substance on it, so then you don't really have to worry about removing all the rust. We're only concerned if there's possibility that there could be some stuff that's kind of hidden in it. So the Kitzer Shulchan Aruch al Basar Bechalav in source 31 says that you have to clean everything. You didn't clean it properly. I feel bit yeva loho ilah hagalas of klum tariklanakoso heitev velaxor lahagil. So you really cannot do hagala without cleaning the item first, and that's true with a lot of things that we kasher. It's really important to clean it first, and even after the fact. With the exception of, again, if you're doing Libun Chamor, let's say with the self-cleaning ovens, then you don't have to clean it in advance. But with Hagala, you definitely have to clean it in advance. And if you don't, then you have to clean it and re-kasher it. There's also another idea found in source 32. The Rush talks about waiting 24 hours before kashering something. So there's really two options that the Rush presents. So if the utensil is ben yom, it's been used within 24 hours, so then you would need 60 times, water over the volume of the utensil in order to clean it, right? So if you have like a giant, let's say you're trying to kosher like a spoon and you have a giant pot and there's 60 times, water in the pot, than the spoon. So you could do it that way. Or if they haven't been used within 24 hours, so you don't need shishim, you don't need it that big, you just need to you just need to put it in the pot.
There's always the question of what pot you're doing this in.
There's two people talking at the same time. Sorry. Herb, then Tony, yeah?
Let's say you used it for non-chametz. Is it still considered use?
Yeah.
Is it only used
Well,
for chametz?
it depends what you're kashering for. If you wanna if you have a chametz, utensil they want to kash for Pesach, then so yeah, you have to do Haggadah.
Wasn't used as a chametz.
I think
What's the question? We can't hear him.
The question was, let's say you used it within 24 hours, but not specifically, let's say you're kashering a spoon for let's say you're kashering a knife for Pesach. And you used it for butter within 24 hours, but you haven't really used it for chametz. I think in theory we're really trying to get everything
Because it doesn't
out.
belong.
Well, so if
It wouldn't matter.
right, if it's cold, probably wouldn't matter. Anyway, if it's warm, I'd probably say, you really shouldn't use it for 24 hours. I think that's just the general policy we use. So the Rama points out our custom is not to rely on shishim and to do hagal on something that's been used within 24 hours. It says in hagashum kli kozmanshu ben yoma. Any utensil that's been used within 24 hours, we do not kasher, period. That's what the that's what the Rama says, and the Mishnah Berurah explains because we have to be concerned that you won't have the proper amount, you won't have the proper shear of water to do Haggalah. So therefore, we just make a general blanket approach that that you can't use something within 24 hours before kashering it. Yeah,
Okay, I'm good with that.
I'm gonna skip a little bit here. Shulchan Aruch raises the possibility of placing ash in a pot if you wanna, if you want to do Haggadah on something that's been used within 24 hours. So maybe you could put ashes in the water, and that would make it a nosin tam lifgam, and therefore you can kasher something within 24 hours that's been used within 24 hours. The Shach vehemently rules against that. He says, "Dinza lo nimtza b'shum posek." This is a made up halacha. The Beis Yosef himself didn't mention in the Beis Yosef. It's not mentioned to the Achronim, so we do not, we do not, we do not do that. Fine. Okay, let's go to the actual Haggadah process, verse 38. So Shulchan Aruch says that the way we do Haggadah is kli rishon nikra sheitichu bo mayim al ha'esh, afilu eno ata al ha'esh rak sho den roteach. So you have to put the utensils in a kli rishon. And the kli rishon is a pot of water that that was boiled on a fire. And even if you take it off the fire, but it's still boiling, or that it's yad soladis bo, it's above a temperature in which if you touch it, your hand would recoil. So that's all considered kli rishon. So that's when you want to put the items in. You want to put it in a pot that it has boiling. Boiling water.
Actually, it does say here the answer to Tony's question. It's a clean, larger clean pot that has not been used for 24 hours. So I guess I was wrong.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, good. So anyway, again, that makes sense because you want to use a pot that if you're kashering something in a pot, you want it to not have any prohibiting taste in it. Okay. The Torah goes on to describe sorry, so the Taz and Mishnah Berurah talk about that the water, it's not enough that the hand would recoil, but it should be literally boiling, that the water should be bubbling. Fine. So we're supposed to place the entire utensil in the water. The Torah says that let's say that the utensil is too big. Can't put the whole thing in at one time. You just put in one part first and then the other and then you put the other part.
So maybe bring the water back up to a boil again.
Yeah, you have to. Yeah, so you have to constantly, as you put each utensil in, you have to make sure that the pot is boiling. So that's something that's involved. So let's say you have to put, let's say, a pot in another pot, but at a certain point you have a pot that's going to be too big to fit in another pot. So we'll read verse 43 in English. After one cleans the utensil well and waits 24 hours, one should fill the utensil with water and place it on the fire till it reaches a roiling boil. Fine. If one is afraid that perhaps when the prohibited substance was cooked in the utensil, the bubbles rose up over the walls and prohibited substance was absorbed on the rim of the walls above, one must kosher the rims of the walls as well. One should do this by taking a stone or iron and heat it until it's the same temperature as boiling water or slightly higher, and then place it in the water. And when he places it in the water, he will cause the boiling water to go up above the rim of the utensil and render it kosher. So this is what we call an even melubenis in Hebrew. But again, you're taking like a stone or something, and you're making sure that it's like, you know, that it's like as hot as possible. And then you put it in this humongous pot, and then the water splashes up and it will go around the rim, and then everything is kosher.
Can I ask a question of the women and or whoever it is who does this job? Those of you who have those closed burners, has anybody done this where the water goes over the top? Because I have no clue how to get inside there if water goes down. Has anybody ever done this? Well, I don't do
it. I do not. I've done it, but I do not have closed burners.
Well, they're not quite closed. They're open enough for something to get in. So I don't know. I don't know how you could do this on a stove without the water going down onto the
gas
portion. And
yeah. I haven't done. I have.
Not
I haven't
to worry. I'm not going to be doing it anyway.
Okay.
Just curious.
Okay. Okay. So Mordecai talks about if you have a wooden ladle that also does Hagala, both metal and wood are Hagala. And Shulchan Aruch points out that the handles, well, so Mordechai and then the Shulchan Aruch point out that the handle is included as well. And Mishnah Berurah explains the reason for that is because, especially when it comes to metal, so we assume that that since heat spreads through the whole thing, so it's the same thing with the substance. So the absorption spreads through the whole thing. So with particularly metal, you have to kosher the entire utensil. But it's pointed out that, in fact, we do apply this also to other utensils as well. Even if it's not metal, so whether it's wooden or the like, so you have to do the handle also. So the Mishnah Berurah explains at the end of source 46 that akorchach dechashin and od shemit kibel hayad eitzah pam chamed al yedei kli rishon. So it's possible that the handle also got dirty at some point when you were using it. So therefore, just be safe. We kosher everything.
Excuse me.
Yeah.
I'm sorry to keep interrupting, but I seem to remember way back in the beginning of my days being told that if the handle was of the knife was separate from, you know, not a one piece like the silver, but like a wooden handle on a knife, that you couldn't kosher it.
Right, because that's probably because what we talked about before of like if there's any sense that there could be like a hole or something, right, that it's not continuous, so then there could be substance that's sort of like, you know, in between.
I remember the same thing. Rabbi Levinson would not kosher knives like that, Tony.
Uh-huh. Right. So, but even if the handle is a continuous, it's all one piece. And you might say, well, I only need to kosher, you know, the side that I cut with, or the side that, you know, or the spoon part of it, but the handle. So we say that there's concern that maybe chametz or forbidden substance could have touched the handle as well. So we kosher the whole thing. Now the Ramah says that if you didn't kosher the handle, so b'dieved you could still use a utensil, but lechatchila we do try to make sure that we do. We're not talking about Liban though. We're talking about. Yeah, talking about Gala.
Rabbi, can I ask a question?
Yeah.
If it's not necessarily for Pesach, if it's just, let's say, I trafe up, a fork or a spoon or something during the year, and I want to kosher with Haggadah, just do what you said, take a pot, has to be used 24 hours, boil up water till it's boiling, and then throw the fork or the spoon in. Do I need an oven? Do I need a rock that makes the overflow on the sides, or just enough to drop the fork and spoon in
No,
it?
you don't even need the oven. Like if you're just doing forks for Pesach, you also don't need the oven. You only need the oven
That is too big.
when you're trying to kosher the pot itself.
So then you just drop the utensil in, take it out, and then I was told you rinse it right away under cold water. Is that also
Yeah,
part of
so
it?
hopefully in the next 2 minutes and 53 seconds I will finish this portion and I'll be able to walk us through that part of it also. Okay. So Shulchan Aruch points out that that the cover of a pot also needs a Haggadah. If you ever look at a the cover of a cholent pot, you know how or a soup pot, you know how it gets steamy and the whole thing. So you have to kosher the cover as well. The Ben Ish Chai talks about obviously you need to fully immerse the utensil, and at the same time he talks about not leaving in too much. I don't know why. Specifically, why one shouldn't leave it in too long. Here, I don't remember why that is, but certainly you dunk it, take it out, and that's fine. Right. So right, I think that's the case, and in fact, that's also the reason for. Rinsing after we do Haggadah. So Tosfos talks about that there's a custom to rinsing, and he says that actually they weren't quite sure why that was done, but there was a so Rashi explains in the Tshuva that there was a concern that if you didn't rinse it, so then the forbidden substance would return. So that's why we rinse it. So Shulchan Aruch says, "Nagin lishtof hakli b'mayim karim achar galam yad." You should wash it in cold water immediately. But Mishnah Berurah says, if you did not rinse it afterwards, it doesn't prevent you from using it. That would be sufficient. Okay, we're not going to have time to talk about the rest of it. I think just very quickly, earthenware we don't kosher glass. We said previously that we do not kosher, Ashkenazim do not kosher for Pesach. That's something we're more machmir on for Pesach than for the rest of the year. And plastic is a machlokas, where Moshe Feinstein was not in favor, as far as I understand. Part of the question is that plastic didn't exist once upon a time. But I personally would kosher plastic, including plastic dishwasher. If the racks are plastic, then I would say that that's fine. Okay, so we'll continue a little bit next week, and we'll talk about B'dikas Chametz also next week.